everyone, welcome back to An Oral Account. My name is Molly, and today I'm here with my really good friends, Sammy, Ilya, and Jakob, and we're here to talk about the cultural differences between all of our countries. So first, everyone is going to go around and introduce themselves and where they're from in their mother tongue, and then again in English for the people who don't speak English. So I'll go first. I'm Molly. I'm from Hollywood, Florida, in the United States.
I'm Sammy. I'm from London, England.
Ich heiße Ilya, ich komme aus Deutschland. I'm Ilya, I'm from Germany.
Hey, ich heiße Jakob, ich komme von Lund. Hi, my name is Jacob, and I'm from Lund, Sweden.
Amazing. So, I thought it would be fun to go around first and talk about the stereotypes we have of each other's countries and the people in the countries. And then later on in the episode, we'll kind of break those down, talking about like different behavior and general values, whatever. We'll just break it down.
So if I didn't live in London, I'd actually want to live in Germany, but Berlin. And I know there's like different stereotypes for different parts of Germany, but I kind of see Germans as they know what they're doing, and kind of like straight to the point and focused. Obviously, we're talking about Germans like post like 1948. Respectfully. Swedish, I'm sorry, but IKEA. I'm really sorry. Meatballs and IKEA. Yeah.
Fair enough, yeah.
But obviously being with you two this year has shown me that we have more differences than I thought, but also a lot more similarities.
The cliche that like the public knows is like, okay, US burger is fat and all that. But like, that's total bullshit. It's never how I viewed America because I grew up on American movies. And also I've met some Americans because they joined us on our Jewish camps. So that's what my stereotype is based on. So it was based on that Americans are very, very loud, in a good way. Like one American makes as much like noise and what's it called, like vibes, as like four Germans maybe could, and that's very cool. And also any American could beat me in basketball, but football it's like more or less even.
Mm-hmm.
So my stereotypes usually comes from memes, I'm sorry. When I think of America, I either think of the corporate world and capitalism, or like Big Mac. I saw a meme where a man traded a baby for 15 Big Macs, and that's like basically US. Florida is another part where I mostly think of Florida men. So if I ever go to the US, I really want to go to Florida. I just walk around and like see alligators in Florida men.
Yeah, same.
The UK is very, since Hollywood depicts London as very posh and all the characters that speak in a British accent always are very posh, that's the way I see it. Maybe some Harry Potter in there as well, but that's basically UK.
Mm-hmm.
Germany is very, no, it's a very nice country. I've been there before. But the only thing I can think of when I think of Germany can be like a guy drinking beer, Kartoffelsalat, Schnitzel.
Mm-hmm.
But like that's like the hardcore stereotypes. But since I've been on Kivun, the gap year program we're on this year, I've gotten to know you guys so well, and I see that that's not the case anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But like if I had to describe like typical American, that's what I would describe.
Yeah, I feel like all the stereotypes that everyone has said is what the stereotype. I feel like London, like I and the UK, I expected everyone to be so proper and. Like, it's true. Especially of you, it is true. But, like, not of everyone else. Like, everyone is very proper and not, like, quiet, but, like, very well-educated and everything like that. In Germany, I thought you guys were very aggressive. And, yeah, that's basically it. And the same thing that Sammy said for Jakob and Sweden about IKEA and meatballs. And I was going to ask you, I don't know how I've never asked you this all year, but is ABBA a really big part of your culture?
It is, yes. So ABBA was a huge hit in the 80s, I think. Mom and I listened to it all the time. And whenever we are like outside the country and we meet some people, we're like, ABBA,
yeah.
And it's really funny. So I listen to them a lot.
Yeah. That's a good thing to have from your country.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. So the next thing that I wanted us to talk about is the behavior of an average person from English person, an average German, average Swedish person.
So I'm really not the average Brit. I went to a private school, I'm Jewish, and there are lots of other factors that distinguish me from the like mainstream Brit. But equally, the majority of Brits aren't like part of the mainstream. There's not like one overarching Brit. Mm-hmm. Some people don't even identify as British. They go more Scottish, English, Welsh. So I can't speak about what the average Brit is. But whilst we have a lot that makes us different, and how each city has its unique culture and heritage, there are some unifying traits. Basic ones like a love of a summer barbecue to what I like to think are more important ones, like a desire to see like good done in the world and people looked after.
Mm-hmm.
If I may expose Sammy for a second, if not, it's okay, tell me and just cut it out. What you just did was you asked for a pen, said, hold on a second, wrote some notes, and then based what you said on these notes to not say anything wrong and have it structured, and that's the average German. Aside from that, I can just like agree most of what you said, because I feel like I'm being very much pushed into a direction to say something that someone will say is racist,
mm-hmm.
Because it's very generalizing, of course.
Yeah.
But like, I'm not the average German myself. I'm barely even German myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because my parents are from the Soviet Union, so I was raised in my house with still like kind of some of that mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And also, of course, we're Jewish,
mm-hmm.
Which makes a lot of difference.
Mm-hmm.
The school I went to was also like about 80% immigrants, so I'd never interacted with like the average German. What is the average German?
Yeah.
But what our society really like puts weight in, based on how like the state is kind of built, is a lot of bureaucracy,
mm-hmm.
and being very strict to rules and loving your regulations.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's also the cliche.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, you will find also like a lot of like very friendly, very welcoming people,
mm-hmm.
in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just remember when we were in Machtesh Ramon with Marva, and we all had our uniforms, I just like heard German tourists. And I was like, I haven't heard any German in like months prior to that, so I was very excited. So I asked them in English first, hey, are you the German group? And I had like, I was looking very Jewish. I had my kippah on. I looked Jewish anyways, but then I had also the Tzahal uniform,
mm-hmm.
and I just could like see the sweat,
yeah.
the fear in their eyes. Like, what is he gonna ask us? Don't ask me what my family did. But I'm like, and they're like, yes, and I'm answering in German, hey, ich auch, willkommen, hab Spaß. That was very funny. That was probably some average German. That was like,
yeah.
old tourists,
yeah.
like German tourists. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a picture of an average Swedish person in mind. I don't know if it's that politically accurate, but anyway, so the average Swede differs a lot between age groups. I mean, now the curtain is very big in Sweden, you know, like the middle part with your hair. It's very
like
big.
Like Hugo.
Like Hugo, yeah. So thing. Like my friend Hugo. The average Swede are very tall in
yeah.
general, so I'm considered short.
Mm.
Yes, and I don't know, yeah. So I'm considered short, so whenever I'm standing in my friend group, I always have to look up, even though I'm
mm-hmm.
here on Kivu, and I feel like I'm kind of long, like, thank you. But yeah, anyway, the average Swede is a very awkward person. We love to stand in queues.
Mm-hmm.
We don't talk to each other that we don't like. If you don't know someone, you don't talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
Same.
We love standing in queue, politeness, order.
Mm-hmm.
The average male, like the average Swedish, I can only speak for myself. The average Swedish person also loves a good barbecue. We have our own specific holidays that are very common for Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
And since I'm Jewish, and since mom is from the Netherlands, dad is from Sweden, we do celebrate some of them, and not to the extent that the average Swedish person does.
Mm-hmm.
Sweden is one of the most atheist countries in the world, with a population of over 85% considering themselves atheists.
Mm-hmm.
They all say they're Christian, but they're not.
Mm-hmm.
They basically go to church to get confirmation, like it's, I don't know, they at 15 years old they say I believe in Christ, and they get a lot of money from their relatives for doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people are not don't believe in God.
Mm-hmm.
And religion is not really a part of the society.
Mm-hmm. In America, I feel like it's such a large country that anywhere you go, it's like a mini country itself. Like every state has a stereotype of and a certain behavior. So let's say in Florida, people are a little bit nuts, or it's just, there's also like a really large Latin community, and So it's very loud and lively in Miami and everything like that. And then, like, you go to the Midwest and it's a lot more, like, that's where people have more manners and they're more calm, but they're also, like, very down to earth. And then you have, like, people who are from more the South, like the stereotypical, like, people who are in sororities or frats and, like super white and Christian and from the countryside, that kind of vibe. And then you have people from the city who are typically people like to think are aggressive and rude and loud. I think that it's interesting that we all touched upon how we're not an average Brit, we're not an average German, we're not an average Swede, because we're Jewish. And I think that's something interesting that we should talk about is Judaism and anti-Semitism in our countries and what your community looks like in terms of how either how religious or how large it is, or if you have a synagogue. And
so I'm really lucky to live in quite a big Jewish community with a whole range of shuls nearby, Jewish schools, Jewish high schools. And so being Jewish for me is not difficult based on where I live, but I know for sure that if I was in a different place in England, it would be a lot harder.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of anti-Semitism, I personally, I don't look particularly Jewish, my name's not particularly Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
I've been quite lucky that I haven't had any anti-Semitism in my face, but my friends have multiple stories of being shouted at from cars, receiving mean comments on like tweets or on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And it's especially bad during flare-ups with between Gaza and Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And what is interesting is how anti-Semitism a lot of the time takes the form of ignorant anti-Zionism, and that's quite difficult because it's harder to point out and say that's anti-Semitism, that's overstepping the line.
Mm-hmm.
When it emerges from an acceptable debate, like, you need to be able to analyze and critique Israel's actions, and because that's legitimate discussion, it becomes harder to pinpoint when it oversteps the line into blatant anti-Semitism.
Mm-hmm.
So there's quite a gray area before you're able to turn around and say, actually, that's not justified criticism or justified scrutiny, that's just anti-Semitism.
Mm-hmm.
Being dressed up as a intellectual argument.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so in terms of the Jewish community, we have one in our city, and like, contrary to, for example, what I heard from friends from Mexico, where all of the Jews are in Mexico City, and then there's a couple outside in some cities, but then other than that, it's empty of Jews. We all like stay in one community. It's not really the case in Germany. I guess it had to do with that most of the Jewish people in Germany are, as we call it, Kontingenz refugees, which means that we came from the Soviet Union as soon as it opened, and then we were like placed in, like, not refugee camps, of course, but like those things you're in between, and then until you get like a flat in the apartment. So I guess that's how, like, many didn't really at first choose where they're gonna live.
Mm-hmm.
So we're like scattered all over Germany, kind of, in like big cities and small communities.
Mm-hmm.
In my city, we're one of the bigger ones in Dortmund. We have, you can hear like a number of about 2,000 members registered to the community.
Mm-hmm.
However, you'll never see 2,000 Jewish people in Dortmund in one spot, because many of them are just old people, not so active people.
Mm-hmm.
In our youth club, we have like, it's like Nekiva, we cooperate with Nekiva Shlichim, but it's still our own like youth club. Every city has its own, every like bigger city.
Mm-hmm.
We're one of the biggest in Germany. We have like ranging from like 30 to 50 kids on a good Sunday. And I'm very proud of that community. I love this community. That's where I became myself. That's where I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, we're also very, very connected with, like, the Jewish community in Germany is very connected.
Mm-hmm.
We meet on a regular basis in the summers, on camps, but also we have camps in all the other seasons on the vacations. And other events where we just like meet up, where we do stuff together with another city, like with Köln or with Düsseldorf, stuff like that, which is very, very cool, because then you, wherever you are in Germany, basically you have some Jewish friends.
Mm-hmm. In terms of anti-Semitism.
In terms of anti-Semitism, that's a whole new topic.
Mm-hmm.
I pretty much almost the same as Sammy said. So if you don't wear a kippah on the street, if nobody knows you're Jewish, you ain't gonna get no anti-Semitism. If I'm just like in public walking to the store or anything, then no one knows I'm Jewish, and I don't need I don't feel the need to tell anybody because I don't know anybody. Why would I come up to people? Hey, I'm Jewish.
Yeah.
Hate me if you want to. Yeah. But in school, for example, I never hid it because I was very, very proud of it. And there people knew, so there I experienced some anti-Semitism for sure. Most of it was on the younger ages, from like 5th to like 7th grade.
Mm-hmm.
And then people grew up, and most of the anti-Semitism is anti-Zionism, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so what I think is kind of hypocritical in German society is that many politicians, for example, the one in our city, who I had personal beef with,
mm-hmm.
Because of that, they are like, oh, we need to support Jewish life, we need to stand up united against anti-Semitism. But like in a whole speech, they will not once mention Zionism, anti-Zionism, or Israel.
Yeah.
But that's where 90% of the anti-Semitism, at least in the like the open one, in the midst of the society, in the open street,
yeah.
That's where it's all from. And if they are not even like ready to just acknowledge that it's the fact, then I don't believe in anything that they will do for us. And I think we, as the Jewish people always have, we still have our destiny in our own hands, and
mm-hmm.
our security in our own hands.
Mm-hmm.
so the community in Sweden are basically like this. We have three main cities called Malmö, Göteborg, and Stockholm.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the three main communities. And then you can have smaller communities in smaller towns.
Mm-hmm.
But when we talk about the Swedish Jews, you're either in the Malmö community, the Gothenburg community, or the Stockholm community. And if you're not in any of those, you don't really connect to other people, and you're not really part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So since I live in Lund, which is only 20 kilometers from Malmö, I was registered in Malmö, and then I was registered in Stockholm because I thought I was going to university there. But
mm-hmm.
anyway, so I'm registered there. Malmö community is about, I think we would say, 500 members are like registered,
mm-hmm.
and I'd never seen 500 members. So it used like Ilya, a lot of people, like on paper looks really cool.
Mm-hmm.
In real life it does not that
yeah.
much. Malmö is a very specific and specific situation because
mm-hmm.
The community actually split up into two, a more
mm-hmm.
religious one and a more than Orthodox one. But still it's a very nice community, and so since Mom grew up Orthodox, we chose to be part of the more Orthodox community, so that's where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't go to the main synagogue in Malmö,
mm-hmm.
we go to another one. It's run by Chabad, it's very nice. It's a smaller community, but like we still get a minyan every Shabbos. And the other communities sometimes have to, like, don't have a minyan that Shabbos, because it's hard for them to get a minyan sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so the community in Sweden is very, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And the Stockholm community is so much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
It's the capital, so a lot of the Jews live there, of course.
Yeah.
And there is so much more on the website and so much more events and everything you can think of that's there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we are Target and they're like, I don't know what. But
mm-hmm.
they have a really nice community there, so I maybe wanna move up to Stockholm if I move
yeah.
somewhere to Sweden, move somewhere in Sweden, maybe to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, in terms of anti-Semitism, it's not the best to live in Lund and close to Malmö.
Mm-hmm.
So since the 2015 Syrian refugee crisis, Sweden and Germany took in a lot of refugees.
Mm-hmm.
And because Malmö is the first big city you go to, a lot of them stay there and they build a life for themselves. So the demographics have changed a bit since then.
Mm-hmm.
And with the demographic changing, also come a wave of anti-Semitism.
Mm-hmm.
And so my friends have been shouted at, balls have been thrown. The rabbi always have police escort when he goes to shul.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if it's just a random Saturday or if it's just like a big holiday, you always have protection from the government.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
And wait,
that's
I'm speaking too loud. And yeah, in school, since Sweden is a very left-wing country compared to Israel or the US,
mm-hmm.
The news are always like angle in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very anti-Israel and very like pro-Palestine and pro
yeah.
West Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever my friend from school Hugo came to visit Israel, and he made a lot of jokes about like, of
he's
course,
Christian, right?
Yeah, he's Christian. And so he made a lot of jokes about like, oh, haha, let's go to Gaza, let's go there, and no, we can't do this, haha, oh, we're gonna kill some babies, like stuff like that. And
mm-hmm.
it's not. So that's how they're being brought up
yeah.
with like the news.
That's so
since since that's the case, it's always a lot harder to argue with people that only have been like fed one side of the story and haven't seen the whole picture. And yeah, so anti-Semitism in Sweden isn't always the best. But I guess you learn to live with it.
Yeah. Something that was interesting that you told me last week was about the access to kosher meat and what that's like.
Yes, so since it's forbidden to shecht kosher in Sweden, it's considered animal cruelty because we don't use sedatives to put the animal to sleep before we shecht it. We can't do it in Sweden. It is legal in Finland though, so that's pretty funny, but we never go there. Yeah, so what we do is we order from a website called Kosher For You. They're stationed in Belgium, and mom orders 20 kilos, or like about 40 pounds, of meat at a time. And it, because it's shipped from Belgium, it usually takes 2-3 days to come. Sometimes been taken up to 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's also a gamble when you have meat, because you can't leave it out on the freezer for that long.
Mm-hmm.
So in the one, I remember one time during summer when we ordered like a huge order,
mm-hmm.
and it all came back and it had been like stuck in some station somewhere,
mm-hmm.
and it was all ruined because it had been out for so long.
That's crazy.
So you just had to throw that all out.
Mm-hmm.
And also because it's from Belgium, it's very expensive. And you have to ship it, and you have to pay for everything. So when I've been here in Israel, I've been just eating meat whenever I can. Just go to the grocery store, getting a 10 shekel like sausage or anything, just eating it, because like I could never do that at home.
Yeah, it's so different in America, especially in South Florida, because there's such a giant Jewish community that all my life, even before when I lived in Chicago, I've always been to Jewish day schools and Jewish camps, and in South Florida, especially now after COVID, there was an influx of people moving because of like taxes and whatever it was. And so like a ton of New Yorkers and people from LA came down to Florida. And so the community has just been like crazy, crazy growing. And in my community, you know, like everyone is Jewish, modern Orthodox. Everyone is kind of, I've always lived in a bubble. The only time that I've really had interactions with non-Jews was when I was in kindergarten, I went to public school, but just about, like, that was literally it. And so it's going to be very, like, a huge culture shock going to college in a couple weeks and, like, being with so many non-Jews, because I've always lived in a bubble and I've always going to, like, been able to go to shul. And, like, there's, like, several different synagogues in my community, and, like, all of them have, like, 5 different minyanim. Like, it's amazing because, like, there's so much access for us to do Jewish food and Jewish events. So it's going to be a huge culture shock, Nick, in a couple of weeks. Before, when we were talking about the behavior of all of our countries, I noted that we all said something about certain values that our countries have. So maybe we can go around and say, like, let's say, like, pick 3 values that you think your country stands on.
So in school, we're actually taught, like, British values, and it's, I'm not sure I can remember them, but it's, like, the rule of law, equality, and there was probably another one.
Mm-hmm.
So British values, democracy, there we go.
Mm-hmm.
Rule of law, democracy, and equality, those are the kind of like official ones you're taught.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure.
And
like actual British values, gosh, it is hard. It's hard because like what I would say, I can tell you what my personal values are, but you could easily, the minute you walk on the street, you could easily find someone who has polar opposite values.
Yeah.
So my British values are, I would say, accountability. If you've been following the news in Britain, there's always another scandal or issue, and we hold our politicians to account, and there definitely is a widespread feeling that, I mean, it shouldn't really be that high of an expectation. We expect our lawmakers to follow the laws that they set.
Mm-hmm.
And also unity. Yes. Day to day, Britain has its divisions and its disagreements, but when bad stuff happened, like the war in Ukraine, like COVID, there is definitely a strong undercurrent of unity which allows for Britain to face these issues quite successfully.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, first of all, Germany kind of made tshuva on democracy, so now democracy is a big value in like the general German like political society.
Mm-hmm.
The second one I would say is punctuality, except for when you work for the German train company. And then we have the dignity of every human being.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the first law in our Grundgesetz, which means like base law.
Mm-hmm.
and it's that every human being has a dignity and you cannot, like, it's untouchable. So that's what Germans put a lot of value in.
And when was that created?
Later.
Sweden's main values. So, just like Sammy said, Sweden is just not one guy eating meatballs. It's a lot of people.
Eating meatballs?
It's not eating meatballs. Really? No, it's a lot of... It's like a change demographic, and with some guy can have completely different worldview than I have, or something. But it's, we have some main characteristics that you can always characterize a Swede by,
mm-hmm.
I would say. First one is politeness. You always have, like, you don't help people on the bus, but like, if someone needs a seat to get up, you stand in queue. Oh, we love queues. and we, yeah, you just like, oh, no, okay, here, you can go. You can, yeah, go ahead of me, do this.
And you guys are like, no, you,
yeah,
no, you.
That
would never
thing,
happen,
like,
in America.
Another thing come after that is awkwardness. We love being awkward. No one talks on the bus. It's dead quiet. And if there are if there are empty seats, yeah, if there are empty seats on the bus and you sit next to a person, you are considered a stalker.
Rapist.
Yeah, a rapist and a stalker. They will get off the bus, used to take the next bus, so they don't have to sit next to you anymore. It's very, very awkward. During taxi rides, dead quiet. Don't talk.
It's so
train rides, no one talks. If someone has like a teeny tiny bit of music on, it's just like people are like,
yeah,
staring them down. So that's the two main ones. A third one that I can think of might just be family. We value our family very, very much.
Mm-hmm.
You can basically say, nope, I have a family thing, and everyone be like, alright, okay, cool, see
mm-hmm.
you later.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, those are three
mm-hmm.
things. Awkwardness, politeness, and
mm-hmm.
kind, and family.
It's so crazy because that's such a foreign concept to me, that like, if a person sat next to you on the bus and like no one speaks, because I'm thinking of like in America, like every single, if you ever take any transport ever, there's at least one crazy person yelling at you or just yelling in general, and like people are kind of like rolling their eyes or whatever it is. And like, I remember once I was going to the airport and I was taking an Uber at really early in the morning, and it was just me, and I was started talking to this guy who's my Uber driver, and we were just, it was 5 in the morning, and we were having a very long conversation about systematic racism in the US. And like, is that something that would ever happen?
No, in Sweden that would never happen. Yes, we don't, like, there's no such thing as talking to a taxi driver. You say, hi, good morning. And then you sit quiet, and then you maybe say something like, oh, how are you? I'm
like, yeah,
fine.
That's so
and
crazy.
That's it.
No, we only had once that I was sitting on the, what's it called, on the subway. And on the seat, on the two seats in front of me, there was like I think probably homeless, like drugged up couple,
mm-hmm.
and they were talking something, and then very loud, and then just like the fact that they were talking was bothering the guy who was sitting not next to me, but like on the seats that are next to me, you know.
Yeah.
It was like bothering him. You could see it was like very uncomfortable, and I was like, no, yeah, whatever. As long as you don't do anything, it was fine.
Yeah.
So then they left. And the other guy like looked at me and said like, oh, how did you manage to just like stay there seated? You know, like, how, oh my god, those junkies. And I'm like, ah, don't worry, I'm from Dortmund.
Yeah.
It wasn't Frank, it was like, I'm from Dortmund, I know my junkies.
That's
so
funny.
Yeah, that was funny.
I have three values that I think I would define America by. The right to bear arms. I'm kidding. I think I would say also democracy, even if we don't do it that well. I think that to a certain extent, I would like, I'm trying to think of other values, and I think that America tries to be democratic, but I don't think it necessarily is. But I think I really can't think of more. I would say liberty and freedom. People in America love their freedom and love the freedom of speech. I think that that's something that's really, really American. The third value that I would say is individuality, and not in the sense that America promotes being an individual, but I think everyone is really selfishly motivated, and like, very, it's very capitalistic in that way. And people kind of, like, don't really have a... There's not really... unless you're in a specific community, like the Jewish community or whatever it is, you don't really have any sense of community or, like... There is national pride to a certain extent, but not really. And everyone kind of is on their own, does their own thing. And that's something that was really weird for me to come to Israel and to see, like, people caring for each other. Because that's not something that would ever happen in America. You kind of just, like... Everyone is... It's, like, basically, like, every man for themselves. Is what I feel it's like. Something that's very different in all of our countries, I think, is also the teenage social life. Like, just hearing about each other's stories and our lives beforehand, I think that that's something that is very defining and different between all of our countries. I think it's based on general culture and also different laws that are allowed. Like, let's say, like, the drinking age. Like, I think that plays a really big role. Do you guys want to talk about what your teenage social life was like? What it looked like.
So up until this point, I haven't really had a teenage social life because GCSE, so I started them in year 10, and then halfway through year 11 was COVID. So from year 10, all through COVID, there was not much socializing because of, like, work, and then A-level start, and then while COVID is relaxing and the social world is opening up, you're not socializing because you're working.
Mm-hmm.
So really, I haven't had the chance to fully explore, like, social life in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's the reality. When you're in high school, you've got to balance your social life with your school life. And whilst I didn't necessarily find that balance,
mm-hmm.
It is ultimately what you have to do. British socializing really changes with the seasons.
Mm-hmm.
It is centered a lot around, like, Halloween, like, watching Christmas movies, going to see the Christmas lights and all the shop fronts. And then the summer comes and it's sitting outside, barbecues, going to the park, drinking, sunbathing.
Mm-hmm.
But it is really just relaxed, social, boozy,
mm-hmm.
and chill. Like, yes, sometimes you have, like, fun, extravagant plans, but often you're just sitting with your friends in a park or watching Love Actually for the 50th.
Elephant in the room, I don't drink alcohol, and Germans socialize through beer, so I have to find other ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, obviously in school you have your friends. In school, in terms of school, I really heard that it's, like, actually the case in the States that it's, like, in the movies, that you have, like, those different, like, societies building up there, like yeah. groups, like the nerds, the athletes, you know, the Jews, stuff like that, the smart people. I heard that's the case. It's, like, absolutely not the case in Germany. We have, like, of course, friend groups of some extent,
mm-hmm.
but it's not that you can really, like, categorize them, like, okay, yeah. those are they, and they never, like, intermingle or something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we, like, rather had, like, two big friend groups, but we also had, like, everyone was, like, kind of cool. So everyone, more or less, like, I was cool with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
More people I just hung out with, more, some people less. Other than that, most of my teenage social life I spent in the Jewish community, which I'm very happy for,
mm-hmm.
grateful for. That was, like, really the place that made me feel, like, first, like, really, like, valued, you know, when I wasn't feeling that well in school and I didn't have many friends. Like, I could always go to the Jewish community and like, be really, like, a person who's important, you know, mm-hmm. who people, like, love. And then I had people to love there, too. So that's really what made me. First, of course, as a chanuch, and later I became madrich and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So for my social life, usually start off in school. So in Sweden, you have something called basic school from when you're, let's see, 8 to 15. And that's, like, the legal thing you have to go to school for.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can, if you want, further educate yourself, call gymnasium or, like, high school.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to go to high school in Sweden if you don't want to. But I went to high school, and I think that that's where my, like, teenage social life work started out.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it works, basically, yeah. So, like Ilya said, we have a school class. We started in school, and then you can get your own friend group. So we had the Social Justice League Warriors. We had the athletes. We had the nerds. I think I was part of the nerds. Mm-hmm. We, like, open spoke about math equations and, like, disagree. No, it's not like that. So I found my nerds, and they're really, really nice people. So just like Sammy said, socializing really depends on the season.
Yeah.
Swedish summers are always amazing. People get so happy because we get our rays of sunlight
mm-hmm.
during those 2 weeks of July. No, but summer's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can go, like, road trips. So for my part of summers, usually I spend it with my friends, doing road trips. Socializing really depends on the season. During the school year, it's really hard to find time to do stuff. We usually do so anyways. My grades slipped a tiny bit because of it, but it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So because me and my friends are a tiny bit nerds, we usually did like experiments.
Mm-hmm.
That's
so cute.
Yeah, but we usually did that, or we used to hang out, or we used to play football, or anything like that. That was very nice. During the summer, when we had like time off, we usually said, okay, let's go to the bar, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
We went to go see movies, we have a beach really close to us, we went there a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We went road tripping, it was very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, someone you said, hey, my parents aren't home, you guys want to come over? I'm like, cool.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of that is at least my Swedish social life.
Mm-hmm.
So Ilya said a lot about his community, and that's where he socialized. And since there are 2-3 Jewish families in my hometown, and then there's a lot more in the Malmö community,
mm-hmm.
I usually don't go there to socialize. You're there for maybe like Lag BaOmer, Yom Kippur, or Shana. You meet them there.
Mm-hmm.
You also meet a lot of Jewish kids during the one Swedish Jewish summer camp that we have called Glamstar.
Yeah.
I'm working as Madrid this year. Whoop whoop. And there's where I met all my friends. So since we are like very isolated where I live,
yeah,
in a way, I thought I was the only male Jewish boy, born 2003,
yeah,
and from my hometown in Malmö all the way up to Stockholm. And there I met all these kids, and they're very, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have contact with a lot of them.
So in contrast to you guys, I don't have different school and Jewish friends, because I went to a Jewish private school. I think my experience is very, very different socially than maybe the average American who goes to a public school. All my friends are from my community. I grew up with them. I have gone to school with them. I've gone to school with the same kids for all of my life, basically, since when I moved from Chicago. And so I kind of have always been in a bubble in that way. And so I love it. I love to be with my friends because I love my friends, and I thank God was blessed with such good friends who, I really think that if I were in a different environment, I would find them anyway, which is something that's really nice to say. Because we live in Florida, we spend a lot of time at the beach, like an unhealthy amount of time at the beach. And like sometimes, like if we had parties, we would do beach parties, or like when we had senior ditch day, it was at the beach. Like we do a lot of stuff at the beach, and I think that's a huge part of my social life is at the beach. I think it's specifically with my school, my grade, we didn't have as many parties as you would at a public school. I think I can't really speak so much about the public school experience, but I think that it is somewhat like what it's like portrayed in the movies. I only went one for 1 year in kindergarten, so I don't think I have much knowledge to share. Also, I think a lot of the social life revolves around your camps, because everyone basically goes to the same chain of camps, and it's, you know, everyone. And in America, there's this thing called the Yeshiva League, where it's just like the kids that live in New York or whatever, like it's kind of this big, huge network, and you know everyone and you know everything. And so it's, everyone's interconnected. And as much as I try and get away from it, like you're always sucked back in by it. The only you guys have school friends and then your Jewish friends. We have school friends and then camp friends, because the camp is such a big part of the teenage social life in America, at least for a Jew, especially modern Orthodox. We didn't really have much parties, but I think that's just my grade. We didn't really care to. I had a really good friend group, so we would just hang out. And I'm trying to think of the things that we would do. Like we would, a lot of it is like we all have pools, so we would go swimming a lot, or like have pool parties, and we do a lot of stuff outdoors because it's always nice out. We don't have seasonal activities. We always just have summer, which is really fun and nice. And thank God I'm blessed with that. But I was excited to really experience winter this year and like see what winter was like.
So basically what I just like thought about, because I just didn't think about it before, is that I have, so to say, right now I have 3 friend groups. One is the friends that I kept like from school, because school, we all know school, right? You like,
yeah,
get put there, you have to go there by law, Germany, mamash, by law, if you don't go to school, if you go to vacation with your family, you have to pay like a huge, what's it called, penalty,
mm-hmm,
like 500 euro, 1,000 euro, something,
mm-hmm,
like that, for like a day of missing school.
Mm-hmm.
So so you're forced to go to school, and then you like cherry pick your friends in there.
Yeah.
The second friend group, as I've already mentioned, is the Jewish community. That's like family, like second family. And the third friend group, that's the people I make music with, the ones that I meet through rap, through like open mics or just the internet, like text them and like collaborate. Those are very, very nice people, because that's like really the friends that you choose to reach out to, and that like you stay connected with, you have some passion that connects you. And that's very beautiful.
Something that we all touched upon, which I think is huge, and I didn't even realize how huge it was, is school and the school systems, and what that means for one, your social life, but two, for onwards in your future. And something that I didn't know as an American, which probably sounds very ignorant, is that there's other systems besides for like applying to university and like the process to college. I thought it was all kind of universally the same. That was something that really big that I learned this year, is the difference in the high school, let's say like the equivalent to high school, that kind of experience for every kid. So it would be interesting if you guys would share, one, like the schooling system, and two, the transition to university, and what all the standardized testing and all that stuff is like.
In the UK, you have standardized testing like twice in primary school, but then the big one is your GCSEs, which you do when you are 16. So I did 9 GCSEs, which cover like ones everybody has to do, English, maths, and science, and then you can do additional ones. So I did religious studies, modern Hebrew, geography, and history. You get graded 1 to 9 from those, and then you can leave school after you have your GCSEs. If you don't pass English and maths, you have to resit them. So then you do your A-levels, which are the following year, which you do 3 subjects, but people can do more, some people do less. And I did history, geography, and politics, as well as an extended project qualification called EPQ, which counts for half an A-level. Some people don't do A-levels, they will do diplomas or courses or BTEC, and these are the qualifications you need to get into university usually. And then you do university, which you choose your degree before you do it. There's no general study, well there kind of is, there's no like general track and then you choose once you start, no, you choose when you apply. So like I'm doing law, every Brit knows specifically what they're learning in university if they choose to do university, but there are other routes like apprenticeships or degree apprenticeships, but the general trend is GCSEs, A-levels, degree.
And something that I thought is very interesting about how it works there is that you apply to colleges with predicted grades.
Yeah, so you do a bunch of mock exams and your school come up with your predictions, which during COVID turned out to be your final grade. And you apply to university, you do a personal statement, which is a bit like the American personal essay. When I think of American personal essays, I just think of Legally Blonde. So I hope someone listening to this gets that reference. With your predicted grades as well, and sometimes some other testing. Like for law, you have the Legal National Aptitude Test, LNAT. So you then get like a provisional place. So they'll say, yeah, sure, you can have a place if you get these grades. And so results day is a really nerve-wracking time, because it's not just, oh, getting my results and on to the next. You've got the next 3-4 years of your life resting on those grades. So it's major. A lot of the British educational system is very, like, high stakes. Like, you need good GCSEs to do the A-levels you want. You need good A-levels to get into university. And, yeah. There's no really room for error, in my opinion.
So I can only really think about the path that I've chosen, because I just hate bureaucracy like a disease, and I couldn't care any less about like systems that I am not directly involved with, because I have to know them. So what I did was I did my Abitur, which is basically A-levels, and then I decided, and I applied and I got in, because I'm very, very fortunate with it and I'm very grateful. I'm going to do what is called dual studies, which means that it's like a, I think, three months, something like that period of where I'm going to study just finance studies in university. And then the other time, the other 3 months, I'm going to, like three months, of course, like for over the course of 4 years. But I'm going to work and have an apprenticeship with the Commerzbank, with the bank. I'm going to learn the job there. And that's very nice, because they like really take you along, you know. I feel like I'm part of a, not only like this, this bank, but like with the community. They really take me in. They show you around. You know, I'm like not just like thrown into university and all. Look how you get along with it.
Mm-hmm.
But they really like take care of that. I feel comfortable in it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very grateful for that.
Mm-hmm.
So the schooling system, we start at 3-4 years old. You go to kindergarten. I went to something that literally translates to a day mother.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a kindergarten, but it's basically an old lady that you basically ship your kid off to, and you get him back in the afternoon. And so I basically just lived with her during the daytime and then spent back home. So I got to learn their routines. I went shopping with them. We made like vegetable soup together. It was very nice. They move on to called, like I said, basic school, grundskola. Basically, it goes from grade preschool and then all the way up to 9.
Mm-hmm.
And in grade 9 you are 14-15 years old, and yeah, so that's basic school. During grade 3, 6, and 9 you have something called national tests.
Mm-hmm.
You get tested in math, English, and Swedish. During like grade 3 you basically just, like, don't have that much math knowledge and English knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically like, hi, how are you? Like, good. And they're like, great job. And then get more and more complex as you go along with the grades. And after that, the 6th grade 6, 7, 8, and 9 you start getting grades.
Mm-hmm.
So from before that you didn't get grades, you went to school, went to class, had fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. And then you start with grades.
Mm-hmm.
It's from F till A.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a point system. E is 10 points and A is 20 points, and then it increased by 2.5 points each grade.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, when you complete your year 9, you get your average, or you get your average points.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have everything A, you get about 20 points, I would say, because
mm-hmm.
you have like average is your A. And no, sorry, my bad. Sorry, that's for university. That's for high school. My bad. So you actually add all your points together, and you get a point system. So you can max have 340 points, and based on that, you get into your high school if you want to apply for that. And so it's nothing with name nor essay nor nothing. You just like, here's my thing. Here are my points. If you want me, then sure, I'm here. And then when you choose high school, there are different programs.
Mm-hmm.
So you specialize really, really early. I went with the science program because that keep most doors open.
Mm-hmm.
Some people went with the media program. There's the social studies program, a lot of those. I don't know any, like that many of them, I'm
mm-hmm.
sorry. And so I got into my high school, met my friends. And in high school, everything counts. It's not just your year 9 grade anymore that counts,
mm-hmm.
but it's all the grades together, and it turns into an average.
Mm-hmm.
So you can average have a 20 points, which is an A in all your subjects,
mm-hmm.
And then you add plus 2.5 points because you're doing like extra curriculum. You can have a maximum amount of 22.5,
mm-hmm.
and with that points you apply to university. There's no name, there's no nothing. It takes about 20 seconds if you're really fast. It's basically used. You go into this website, you log in, and then you click in whatever program you want to apply for and what university, and you send it in, and
mm-hmm.
then you wait until they give you a response,
mm-hmm.
and see if you came in or not.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one day in Sweden when every student is so stressed, like, don't talk to me, don't
mm-hmm.
do anything, I'm sitting here,
mm-hmm.
I'm refreshing my email,
mm-hmm.
till I get my email.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how the school system works.
That's interesting. In America, that's really not what it's like. We have, from a young age, we have preschool, and then we have elementary school, and then we have middle school, and really the only thing that matters towards your future is high school, unless you're applying to a certain high school and you have to go through middle school. But most of the time, like, because I went to a Jewish one, it was kind of not, it took nothing to get in besides for being a Jew. So in high school, I like, for you guys, it's very different, as you said, that like there's a lot of pressure riding on one thing. And for us, it's really not like that, because all 4 years of your fate is decided by all 4 years, and it's an accumulation of like your grades and your resume, which I think that America puts a lot of weight on extracurriculars and how you look as a person and like the time you volunteer or the certain organizations that you are part of and whatever, stuff like that, because I think it has more weight than sometimes grades do. Depending on where you want to go, people like a well-rounded person more than they want someone who has a good SAT score. And for us, we take the SATs, which are standardized tests with four sections, but like it's basically split up into two math sections, two English sections. And before, it had a lot, there was a lot more pressure on it than there is now, because after COVID, it's not necessarily mandatory. For the school that I went to, it was, because it's a public school, and the school that I'm going to, so it's a public school, so I had to take the SATs, but a lot of my friends were able to opt out of it, and you decide to send your scores or not. We all apply through certain colleges. Like, you basically can apply. There's different decision days. You have like early decisions, and if you know where you want to go, if you know exactly where you want to go, and you're like, if I get in, I would go there right now, you apply to that school, early decision, and if you get in, you get in. And so people have a much higher chance of getting into Ivy Leagues or whatever it is if they apply on early decision. And then after that, for people who don't necessarily know where they want to go, you basically just apply to a bunch of colleges. Like, I applied to so many colleges, so many random colleges, because it's like, a lot of times it doesn't take much more. Like, you have your personal essay, and then sometimes for certain colleges, they'll have supplements where you write, like, why do you want to go to this college? What do you, blah, 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 like, stuff like that. But I really didn't have to do many of those, and even if I did, it was kind of stupid. You just, like, look up certain, like, oh, I like this, I want to go to this school because this class looks interesting, like, stupid stuff like that. That takes no effort. We find out, depending, like, early decisions usually come out around the same time, but really people find out when they're getting into college throughout the entire senior year. So basically, like, junior year for us is the hardest. I felt that junior is the hardest, because we have like there's a lot of pressure to take a lot of AP classes, which is advanced placement classes, which you can get college credits for. And now that I think of it, like, I think that's why I had such a lax experience, like, so, like, socially and school wise is because I knew that I had 4 years. Everyone knows you have 4 years, so you have more time to kind of breathe and enjoy yourself and prioritize what you want to do and what you don't want to do. And, like, I think that also, like, something that I forgot to mention about my teenage social life is that also because my friends, it's like we all go to the same school, and it's kind of very lax, and, like, a lot of our social life does revolve around school and school events and school sporting games and stuff like that, which I think is a lot of fun. The last thing that I want to do is we all go around and say one thing that we love about our country.
Cadbury's chocolate.
Do you want to expand it?
Oh, it's just so good. It's just so good, honestly. Yeah, but there's a lot of things I love about my country, mm-hmm. but specifically Cadbury's chocolate.
Okay, I'll mention two things. The first one is Weihnachtsmarkt. I love the Weihnachtsmärkte, which means like literally winter market. It's basically every other city, I think, opens up from like, let's just say December till Christmas, mm-hmm. Maybe it starts like late November or something. Built up just like in the middle of the city, a shuk where there wasn't a shuk before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all decorated and themed around Christmas. You have like reindeers everywhere and Santa Claus is on the lights. You walk around, it smells like cinnamon and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas music, like, you can be Jewish as much as you want. You cannot tell me this is not just a vibe. You know, you don't believe in Jesus. You don't care about that. But like, or you do what you want. But like, everybody loves cinnamon. And everybody loves the smell of it and the bells and the stuff. It's just it's such a vibe. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is the Ruhrpott, which is like the area that I'm from. I don't know exactly how it's defined, what's the Ruhrpott and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it's that society that like lives in where I live, where there used to be a lot of like the industrial stuff and like the coal mines and everything. So from that to this day, kind of, like, less, of course, because we're, like, more, like, even throughout Germany, globalized.
Mm-hmm.
But still, in the Ruhrpott, we have, like, this Ruhrpott mentality of, like, being more, like, having no filter.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's, like, a very, very fun dialect, a very
mm-hmm.
fun accent. Also, some Yiddish in that accent, actually. I don't exactly know how it got in there, but it is in there. Like, Meshuggah, people understand. Malochen, people understand. And I really like that.
Something I really like about Sweden is the Swedish fika. There's no...
Sorry, as a German? Continue.
There's no really explanation. It's basically like British tea time, although it is mandatory to have coffee and a cinnamon bun. It's like something they say, but like, here, you can have a fika for like 5 crowns.
You can have a fika.
Why is that so funny as a German?
It sounds like, if I may say, like fucking in German. Like, really? Like it's ficken, you know, fika. Oh,
that's funny. No, so that's something.
Yeah, we do fika in Sweden. We take a tea and then we fika.
Anyway, so that's something I really like because it's really grounding and it's just like a nice social thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I like to do, like another thing I like about Sweden, I have to say, like IKEA.
Yeah.
I used to go there as a kid with my family. It was a whole, you do, like it's a whole day.
It's a day it's trip.
You can't just go there for 2 hours. It's a whole day. You go there at 10 in the morning, you come back at like 5, like yeah. 10 in the afternoon, like 10 p.m. You, like it's everything.
Yeah.
So I go in the morning. And as a kid, you just walk around and you test all the beds because you have to. Like, try to scare people. Yeah. You know, the average stuff.
Yeah.
And the best part is the warehouse. So you go down, all the way down, and they have these big, almost like shopping carts. Not shopping carts, just like big trolleys. They're supposed to put all your furniture on. But as a kid, I just took one, and we basically had like Tokyo Drift down there. And we were once asked to leave because I crashed into a thing. Yes. Anyway. Very nice, and then you get ice cream, and in the middle of the day, you're like, alright, let's go get food, and you get some food, and in Sweden, it's really kosher, so we get usually the fish and stuff like that, and this thing is vegetarian, and yeah, it's just a nice thing to do. I haven't been in ages, but yeah.
For me, something that I love about America is the variety that you can get there, from the people to the places that you can see, and I think that that's something that's so beautiful about America, is the amount there is to explore, and every... I think it's because of the size, but also because of the different types of terrain that is there. There's mountains, there's ocean, there's city, there's... And every place that you go to has a culture of its own, and I think that's so amazing. And I think that I realized that when I went on a road trip with my family, and we went to, like, over 25 or 30 states, and it was during the summer of COVID, and you realize how much there is to see, and you realize how big the world is, even if it's just... No, the world is in America, but there was so much to see in America. They're rolling their eyes right now at me. Yeah, and I'm really excited to spend the next 4 years exploring because there's so much to see and so many people to meet. And that's my goal. I had a question for the two of you, actually. Do you guys feel more connected to each other and to each other's countries than you do to America or England because it's such a larger group and you guys are the minority? On the program.
Wait, again.
Do you mean as do you mean culturally or do you mean on the program right now?
Both.
Kind of, but don't get me wrong. But it has to do with that I've met Jacob once before Kevon, because we met on the Shabbaton. So he was like the only person that I've known for 2 days of knowing. before coming to Kevon, so. So I knew, okay, well, no matter what, I know Jacob, I'm not alone, you know, I don't have to, like, have this weird time to find someone that I know, also, when we talk about the countries we're from, what Jacob says is, like, way more relatable than what you say, because when Jacob was talking, I was, like, nodding, like, yeah, same, oh, that's good words, you said what I thought, but way more beautiful, you know, it like, resonates. When you speak, I'm just jealous. Like, you have a Jewish life, you know, we have a Jewish survival. So like
also Florida man.
Yeah.
Florida crocodile.
Alligator. You guys need to come to Florida to just see Florida men in the wild in real life.
Oh my god, yes. Have you ever Googled Florida men and then your birthday?
And the scary thing is that every year it's different. Every year there's someone else.
So, yeah, I googled mine. Mine was that Florida man took off all his clothes because he felt he played better basketball better that way.
why don't we end the episode by looking up Florida man. And your birthday and find the most interesting one.
Yeah, such a good way. Okay. It's still running. I'm sorry, I thought it was past my day.
Tell us the date and then the most interesting headline.
The 28th of October, 2019, Florida man jumps off surfboard, lands on shark.
Oh.
I just had the article and I had to say the photo is more funny. But anyway, a Florida man caught playing basketball naked at a public park said he thought it would be help improve his skills, according to police.
I just found two. I found one and I kept scrolling and this one is better, but it's from 2009, but it's hilarious. This one is Florida man arrested protesting sand. Not sure what that means. I'm probably going to have to read up on that later. And the second one is Florida man arrested after calling 911 for booze and ice cream. Both of them were old men, about 65 to 75 years old.
I want to meet them.
Come to Florida and you will meet them. Anyway, thank you guys so much for coming on. It was so much fun talking to you guys and to hear. And I hope, and it's so crazy because I have a list of different topics I wanted to touch on and we got through maybe like a, like yeah, we barely got through it, and I think that's what it, like, it comes to show how much there is to learn about each other and our cultures and how much there is to every place that you go to. And I hope that one day we can do a part two to the series and talk more, because there's so much to learn about each other. And I appreciate you guys coming on and being such great guests, so thank you
very much.
Yeah, thank you for having us.